Hello, I'm Kerry Binding. I'm Research Associate at the University of Glamorgan in South Wales, which is the home of Shirley Bassey, Richard Burton, Anthony Hopkins and Tom Jones. I'm going to talk about terminology services and outline the potential benefits of adopting a service-based approach in disseminating your terminology to the rest of the world. I'm trying to follow a very illuminating roadmap from Dan Brickley. I'm not sure I can maintain that level of excitement, but hopefully the coffee will start kicking in and you'll be okay. Hopefully we'll be able to illustrate the current usage of our terminology services in Glamorgan, and we'll illustrate in the context of two ongoing projects, and I'll describe the services we've developed so far, mainly for our own purposes, but as they're web services, they're available for anybody to use, and I'll add some short demonstrations of some client applications that use these services. So we kick off with the usage of the services at Glamorgan. Two ongoing current projects. The first is STAR, Semantic Technologies for Archaeological Resources. This is a three-year project funded by the AHRC in collaboration with English Heritage and the Royal School of Library and Information Science in Denmark. The aim of the project is to investigate the potential of semantic terminology tools for widening access to digital archaeology resources, including disparate data sets and associated grey literature. Grey literature is the unpublished fieldwork reports that the archaeologists have, and they'd like to publish them in a formal way. English Heritage are contributing the data sets and domain expertise, and Royal School of Library Information Science are contributing evaluation expertise. The more concrete aim of the project for me is to demonstrate searching and browsing of domain-specific data sets at a quite detailed, meaningful level. The second project is a project called Pertains, and that's in collaboration with MIMUS and the University of Manchester. It's developing a tag suggestion system to encourage the use of controlled terminology when users tag documents on the web. And we'll talk about a service we developed which suggests suitable tags from a controlled terminology. We already have some extra users of the terminology services we've developed. In addition to the projects for which they were initially developed, the services were successfully utilised externally by the Delos Digital Library Management System and the Sheffield University ArchaeoTools project. They pick them up and use them. And they've also been used in a number of internal Glamorgan student projects, which are ongoing. So we actually have some real users besides ourselves. So we'll talk about the architecture of the services for the STAR project. The services work with thesauri represented in SCoS RDF format. The English Heritage thesauri in the initial stages of the project were converted to SCoS from a bespoke database format. So the project is specific to the archaeology domain, but because we're using the SCoS RDF format, we can interchange the thesauri and the services would be generalizable and reusable in other domains. The services access an RDF database containing the conversions of the EH thesauri, plus some archaeological data sets formatted to the CDoc CRM. I won't talk about that side of it. We have separate services for accessing the data formatted in CRM. We'll just talk about the SCoS and the terminology side. Key advantages in the conjunction with the service-based architecture is the platform neutral, first of all, and the services don't prescribe any particular user interface, so we have encapsulated functionality that people can pick up and use. The services we have support searching across multiple thesauri, browsing the thesaurus structure, and concept expansion, which is something we've been working on in previous projects. And we'll see some concrete examples of that. So we're searching across these five separate thesauri, and we'll have a look just in detail at the technical implementation. The RDF files were imported into a MySQL database via an RDF library called SemWeb, which is similar to the Jenna Java library. The database was then extended for full text search capability. So our services use a combination of the SemWeb library directly and direct to SQL access. So there's a triple store database underneath, which can hold diverse types of data, not just thesauri terminology. They can also hold CRM data, OWL, Dublin Core, etc. So quite flexible. The data is all held in a platform-independent format, which makes it relatively future-proof. It's serialized as RDF XML, but it could equally be N-triples or turtle format. So the services for SCoS are based on something that was developed initially in ILRT in Bristol called the SCoS API. And so we've used a selection of function calls and then added a couple ourselves just to expand the functionality for our own purposes. So we're communicating via the SCoS API web services, which are developed using SOAP, and the client applications are then calling these services. So we'll have a look at a client application. Now you may think of web services and web content always being browser-based, but of course anything can call a web service. And so the first applications we developed were actually Windows applications, but they are communicating across the web to get their data. So this is browsing the details of the available thesauri for the system. So these are all the thesauri that we have in there. And each time we select one, it's making a service call to find the top-level concepts for that scheme and any description that there may be as well. I'm not sure if you can really read things at the back there, but I'll try and describe what's going on as we go along. So the second example here is a search across concepts, searching across all the available thesauri for a particular concept, looking in preferred and non-preferred term for matches. We searched on the term corn. You can see we found matches in monument types thesaurus and the MDA object types thesaurus. We searched across multiple thesauri. We located the concepts. And this is a real-time recording of the application working. So it's working across the service interface. So it was an initial demonstrator for us to show that the service-based architecture was feasible in real-time applications. Third application that we have here, we're looking at the details of a selected concept, a corn mill, and then we're navigating via semantic expansion, something we developed in the Facet project a few years ago. And this is for when you're less concerned about the specific relationships between terms, you just want things which are relatively close in the thesaurus structure. One of the observations in this initial application was that we needed to enhance the performance because we noticed that the service interface was inherently chatty. It kept going back and forth for data, and so we developed some concept caching. So every time we get a concept and the details of it, we don't go back to the server again. If we need it in the future, we consult the cache first, and that seemed to provide us with an acceptable level of performance. And so you can see we're navigating around the concept space here, and we have back and forward buttons, so we can go back and forward through the history of the previously visited concepts. You can see that's very fast because they're all in the cache, so it's not very onerous for the system. Now, just having an application like that on its own is not quite so useful, so what we wanted to do was to integrate the terminology into an actual application, and so what we did was created an application which could search using the terminology in the thesauri against the archaeological data sets. And so this is a demo of the same underlying services being used in another application. So we have a suggestion service on the left-hand side. We're searching for ammunition. We press go, and we find a number of concept matches. And what it does is automatically expand the concept to find terms around ammunition, and then we use that in our main search against the CRM formatted data, which is the archaeological data. So we find matches in a number of areas, and then you can see we're finding musket balls, spherical shot, things which are types of ammunition, but they're not using the word ammunition. So the key advantage of the service-based architecture here is that it's encapsulated functionality pre-implemented in the service, so there's no need to write it yourself every time you want to use it. So I think it partially answers the gentleman's question earlier about how you can use SCOS in an effective way and in a decent enough timeline. If you've got functionality already implemented for you, you can just pick it up and use it in your applications. Problem arose for us in this project was that these applications were put on the web for download using the click once technology, Microsoft's click once. You're supposed to be able to just click once on it and it installs all the necessary prerequisites and the application, latest version of the application. So all of your users are always using the latest version and they've got everything. It didn't quite work like that for us in English Heritage because their browser policy was so locked down that they weren't allowed to access particular types of application, and this was one of them. So we had to rethink this. So what we created was some web-based components, and this, I think the decision to adopt the terminology services proved right here, because the browser application components were developed very rapidly because we're using the same underlying function calls to do it. So we've got some examples of these components. These are equivalents to the functionality that we had in the Windows applications. These are just running in a browser. So these are browser-based AJAX components along the lines of what we proposed and described in a Journal of Documentation paper some time ago. So these components are platform neutral and they're cross-browser, so they work the same way in Firefox, IE, Chrome, Opera. Mildly interesting, I actually had it working through a Wii games console on my television. Sort of from a geeky point of view. But the point is, you could create a special interface for the Wii, but use the same services underneath. you actually have to point to them with one of those dynamic pointers and training. It's really difficult. So there's an example on the top left of searching for concept. And once you search for a concept, each concept is a hyperlink, which takes you to details of a concept. Bottom left is details of a concept. You've got all the relationships to other concepts. And again, each of those terms is a hyperlink that takes you to that concept. Bottom right is browsing the available thesauri, which we saw earlier on the Windows application. And top left is an interesting one because it's navigation via semantic expansion. Again, we're not displaying the types of relationships that we have. We're doing a sort of spreading expansion over the thesaurus structure until with a weighted traversal of the relationships, so it eventually just fizzles out and stops. But you get a ranked list of things which are deemed to be relevant to the thing you're looking at. And as you click on each term, it redoes the expansion and puts the term you clicked on at the top. So it's an interesting alternative interface. We mentioned in the paper there may be a case for some more specialized services over and above the SCoS API. Vocabulary types are not specified in SCoS. It's meant to bring together different vocabulary types like thesauri, classifications, and taxonomies. In traditional object-oriented systems, the capabilities are based on the absolute type of an object. In RDF applications, the capabilities are more based on the properties present. So you may not need to know the type of the thesaurus. You may just have extra properties that you can pick up and use in your application. So the commonality of the SCoS API could be an advantage, but there's also a case for some more specialized service functionality where the properties can support it. Stella yesterday made some interesting issues on thesauri and classification subject heading schemes. Just how do you model and use pre-coordination and synthesis terms? Do we need different data models to accommodate this sort of thing? And I'm kind of hoping Antoine may have some answers for us later. So some usage observations. In the preparatory work for the Pertains project, which I'll talk about in a second, we started using a more general classification scheme instead of the domain-specific thesauri. And what we found was there were a number of issues with using it, using the existing API that we already had. The classification schemes were typically much more general. They had to cover a wider subject area, obviously. The captions were interesting, and the nature of the captions, they were much longer, they were much richer. There was an accompanying notation which had a specific ordering principle. And we should show an example here of pre-coordinated captions. And this may have implications for user interfaces. If you had these kind of type-ahead systems where you type in the start of the word and it starts to suggest, if all of your captions look like this, then you're going to get lots and lots of suggestions of the same basic concept and different aspects of it. It may not be quite what you were after. We talk a little bit in the paper about whether to use a dedicated service API or just a query language like Sparkle. I kind of summarize what we came to the conclusion here. A query language gives you the ultimate flexibility. The end user can dictate exactly what they're after and get it back. There's a very standard query language that you can use across data sets that support Sparkle. And an easy deployment. Some platforms already have a native implementation of a Sparkle endpoint that you can just pick up and use. With the service API, you don't really need to know so much about the underlying data schema. You just pick up the API and use it. And you also have the opportunity to build in functionality, such as aggregation and things that Sparkle isn't so good at, like the expansion, term expansion that we saw earlier. And you can also implement some performance enhancements on the server side to try and make things work in real time. So as promised, I'll just talk briefly about the Pertains project. I've got a few minutes. This was a tag suggestion service which drew on previous work in a project called NTag. The aim was to improve the quality of user tag metadata. The basis for suggestion was using existing document metadata, titles and abstracts, classification terms, and existing keywords and user tags. The suggestions were from a controlled vocabulary. We were matching against DDC captions and the relative index terms. The algorithm involved disambiguation of the suggestions. What we found was with a much wider subject area, we had far more suggestions, and some of them were very irrelevant to what we were looking for. So we introduced an area of interest filter to try to narrow down the suggestions to our own subject area, which I'll show an example of now. So the implementation, again, it's a MySQL database underneath, the same star components underneath, but with some additional service calls. So this is an example of, this was just a test harness for our own service. The eventual user interface was built into an experimental Intuit and Copac system by people at University of Manchester. This was for us testing our own service. And at the top area there, we have the DDC summaries, the top three levels of the DDC. So you can see we've searched for the term moon and we found all kinds of matches, but now we can drill down the top three levels and home in on the area of interest that we're most interested in. As we've chosen astronomy, and we've got a number of things under astronomy there, and it will allow us to either select all of them or selectively take some out, what it's going to do. So if we rerun the query then on the same term, we can take out terms that we deemed irrelevant, such as terms about astrology. We've selected the astronomy area, so it's filtered out into a more manageable set of terms that we can use. So this is an example of some differing functionality that you may wish to offer over and above the SCOS API for the classification descriptor strings versus thesaurus terms. So in conclusion, the general conclusions are based on our experience of developing and using the services and the associated clients. There's certainly a potential for reuse, and we've already had that happen with the ArcuTools project, the Delos project, and our own decisions about platform, which we ended up using the web platform later. We were still able to use the same services underneath. They offer pre-built functionality, which allows development of the web browser applications using the same services. As far as version control is concerned, the RDF data can be updated in the background and the services continue uninterrupted just using the newer data. So the source institution can maintain version control and just deliver a new SCOS file, upload it, and the data is available for the whole world to see it. You could develop access control restrictions on uses of the services if you really wanted to, but in the interests of openness, I'd kind of not encourage it. Okay, thank you very much. That's all we have.
In the last example of the Pertain system, I didn't exactly understand how is Dewey connected to the more detailed subjects. So you choose a class of Dewey, and then what happens?
And then re-executes the search, but filters down the suggestions that you get back based on the subject area you've selected. So
yes, that's the purpose. But you have only the 1,000 classes of Dewey, so how can you
underneath
them?
The service has everything, but the 1,000 classes were used as a filtering mechanism.
Into the more detailed subclasses.
Yes, yes, it was used just as a user interface for the filtering mechanism.
Okay. Services as Dewey and mapped.
Yeah. So you don't see them, but they are under...
They are part of the entry vocabulary for the suggestions, yes.
You have said classification, not indexing. I can offer a remark, no classification without index. Are you? Is that correct?
Okay. Yes, I mean, I'm not a library theory specialist. I'm more an IT specialist, but I understand there is a difference between classification and indexing. Yeah, there's a distinction.
Some people think so. Yeah. Are there other questions? Yes.
What do you need next from the standards world? What work is there still to do?
Well, I'd like to standardize on the API. We saw with the first services in the STAR project, we were using SOAP. The Pertains project, we were using URL-based API. So you just type in a URL, you get back a JSON JavaScript structure of data. But everybody's doing that linked data part differently. So there was a very exemplary one, which I think you brought up, was the LCSH example. But you know, when you put into your URL concept / number / attribute, everybody's doing that differently at the moment. I think it would be nice to see settling on some way of doing that so that we can all offer SCOS thesaurus at least in the same manner.
I'll add with that question from my point of view. I think what you didn't see as much here, but certainly the potential is there to have displays of classifications that convey more meaning. For example, have meaningful arrangements, have hierarchies that are not advertised on each level, but there's some principle that the user can see. And I don't think ASCOS supports that, but laboriously. It would be nice to have a standard where you could store this data, and then this service could even be more meaningful to users. We have time for one last question. If not, we'll go on to the next talk. Thank you very much again.